There we go. Should be good. Well, I'll, I have 502 Civic City Joint Water Sanitary Authority budget hearing, June 13, 2023. It is 5:03 p.m. Calling to order. The roll call. Okay. Director Carlton?
Here.
Director Price?
Here.
Director Stratska?
Here.
Director Gogas, can you hear me?
Yep.
He's here. Okay. Director Donahue is chair, and I am here. Okay, we've had a budget meeting previously that was forwarded to us as a board, and at this time I'm opening the floor to public questions or comments from anyone from the public or the board. Hearing no questions, I would entertain a motion to accept the budget as
no.
We already accepted it.
We already accepted it?
This was to answer questions of the public.
Oh, answer questions of the public.
There are none. So
excuse me.
Meeting adjourned.
Okay, next. Then meeting is adjourned. It is 5:04 p.m. I apologize to everybody who might be listening now or in the future. We have a new set up here for audio visual at the community center, and we were not prepared for that, so we're doing the best we can. At this time it is 5:04 and a half. Civic City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board of Directors business meeting is now in session. Call to order June 13th, 2023. Like I say, it's 5:04 and a half p.m. All right. Director Carlton.
Yes, here.
Director Price.
Here.
Director Stratska.
Here.
Director Gogas.
Here.
Director Donahue here. All five directors are here. Under the rules of conduct, the next item on the agenda, all cell phones, pagers, and other mobile communication devices must be turned off or silenced for the duration of the meeting. All persons in attendance will remain quiet during the course of the meeting unless called upon to comment. Refrain from any behavior that disturbs, disrupts, or otherwise impedes the orderly conduct of the meeting, to include shouting, booing, hissing, etc. Refrain from creating, provoking, or participating in any type of disturbance involving unwelcome physical contact. Be asked to leave the room to conduct side discussions. All right. Let's move on to item number four, the minutes. May 9th, 2023 business meeting. Does anybody have any comments?
Yes, I do.
Okay, Cameron, we can barely hear you, so speak up, please.
I've got my volume all the way up. I'd like to make a motion or whatever that all recordings of a business meeting are also accepted into the minutes.
You're making a motion that all recordings of business meetings be included in the minutes. Is that correct?
Yes, that it be stated that any of our recordings are part of the minutes instead of you know, when we have to go through and amend minutes and stuff, then it's always in the recording, because the recording has it all. So I would like to see that all recordings are accepted as minutes, which they are.
How can we do that?
Under Robert's rules, now I'll point out that we do not operate under Robert's rules. However, under Robert's rules, it is commonplace for recorded minutes to be summarized as succinctly as possible, especially as to specific items, to be word for word by staff. But you're making a motion to use word for word as per recording as one can hear it. Is that correct?
Yes. By SDAO, all recordings are considered as minutes and as public notice.
Okay. You made a motion. Do I hear a second? Any further discussion? I don't hear a second, Cameron.
So, by SDO rules, our minutes are being recorded, and therefore they are are legal as binding, instead of going through repeating
No, that's not correct.
SDO, I'll bring it up. I could bring it up at the next meeting or whatever, but they are public record and they're considered legal as minutes.
That is correct, but as far as the minutes presented, they are a summary as per Robert's rules. We don't operate as Robert's rules. We use them as a general indicator. And the record is the record. If it's recorded and it's, you know, the video as well as audio, that is the record, and that is fine. But the minutes per se are not necessarily exactly word for word because of audio and video difficulties.
No, but, I understand that. I'm just saying that,
well,
it should be noted that the audio is also considered as minute. It doesn't have to be typed in there whatever.
Okay, well, I tell you what, let's table, since we did not have a second, and the only other discussion was mine, personally, I'd like to look that up. Ann, did you have a comment?
I do have a comment, and I think it's basically what, if I can follow Cameron's idea here, I think the idea is accomplished by the fact that the recording of the meeting is public record, and minutes are the synopsis or the what's the word I want? I think synopsis.
Summary
of the discussion. But in at least in my experience in organizations, that minutes are never intended to be verbatim, and that's why we have a public record of the recording of the meeting. If further background or of the discussion is necessary, we always have the recording of the meeting to go to. So I think we're actually accomplishing your goal, Cameron.
Well, I just wanted that it be noted that recordings are considered as minutes. If there were, yeah.
Well, they are public record, and they are on the website for public consumption.
And it is. It's a summary of somebody listening to it, because anybody that listens to it will get, you know, it's like I told you this, and it goes down the way, and it turns into, I caught a bus train somewhere, or something like that. It just, I just want it to be that the recordings are considered as minutes. And, so, that's my point.
All right, seeing as how I personally, Cameron, want to follow up on this, but to see exactly what SDAO's comments are reflecting that, but I think basically Ann's comments are correct. The recorded recording is the minutes, and but the written minutes as, you know, published by staff or a summary. They're not verbatim word for word. When we question the minutes, it's usually because someone didn't understand what they person said, or that they were misquoted. So I think you're correct already, but I would like to personally study that. So I will go ahead and table that basic discussion at this time and move on to the minutes of May 9th business meeting. Are there any comments about May 9th's business meeting? Sean?
Just under directors present, I was present in person, not by video. I was absent on the April meeting and pertained by video, but in the May meeting I was in person.
Rochelle, are you present? Would you make a correction for the meeting's May 9th business meeting to show that Sean Carlson was present?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. All right. Item number five. Oh, excuse
Wait,
me.
Yeah.
On the meeting minutes, is there a motion, Kathy?
I move the minutes of May 9th be approved with one correction.
I'll second that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried unanimously. Item number five, financial report, accounts payable, May 15th, May 31st of 2023. Are there any comments?
Yes, I am.
Can we keep them short?
Well, hang on, let me get there.
Before we go there, can I ask a question?
Sure.
So for the budget committee meeting minutes, do they have to be approved? They're not on our agenda.
Ah.
Yes.
Rochelle answered in the affirmative, so we may need to backtrack a bit. Maybe.
Before we let Cameron, would you hold off a second on accounts payable? And Kathy makes a point about the budget meeting minutes. I would entertain a motion at this time.
Those meeting minutes are not in the packet, so we can't approve them.
Yes, they are.
The budget meeting minutes?
Yes.
I'm sorry. All it says on the agenda is business meeting.
Yes, but they were in the packet.
I'm sorry.
So I think, if I recall correctly, it was Karen Matthews who asked about the fund for $18,000, the SDS-005 fund for $18,000, not Chairman Culp. It was Karen that found that error.
Rochelle, did you hear that?
I did. I'll make that correction.
Okay. Are there any other corrections to the budget meeting minutes? Okay, if there are none, I would entertain a motion.
I move that the minutes, budget committee meeting minutes of May 16th be approved as corrected.
We have a motion. We have a second.
I don't think I can second it because I wasn't there.
I will second the motion. So we have a motion and a second to approve the budget meeting minutes of June 13th, 2023, as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? We have one abstention. Cameron, were you there? Did I hear an aye or a nay?
Yep, aye.
Okay, so we have four ayes and one abstention. Okay, they are approved. Okay, let's go back to item number five on the main business meeting, financial reports, accounts payable, item A. Cameron, you had a comment.
Yeah, I've got a couple questions, not comments, just questions. Michelle, are you able to speak?
What?
Yeah, go ahead.
Art services, pens. Is it like pens and writing pens, or pens like something else that the description?
Those are writing pens. It's part of our stuff that we were getting for the dormitory days, if we get to actually have a booth.
That's our dreams come true.
Maybe. Hasn't happened yet.
Okay. Card services, compactor.
Like a asthma or a rock compactor. Gravel compactor.
A what? Excuse me?
Sorry, gravel compactor? Asphalt compactor?
I didn't hear you.
Can you hear me, Cameron?
I can't hear anything you say.
Then you've got stickers. I think those are for Dory Dirty?
Yes.
Okay. Then that stickers, compactor. On the page 407. Oh, we did a training with Rich Training for fall protection and lockout tagout. Do we have a policy and procedures for the lockout tagout?
Yes, we do.
Okay. I'd like to have a copy of the updated version on that, please.
Okay.
And then on page 5 of 7, Exxon Water Solutions. That was for the 100K pump. Do we have a backup pump for that? I take it that's what it was.
I believe if it's what I'm thinking it is, we used our backup pump and we had ordered a new one for a spare.
Oh, okay. So do we use that elsewhere? Just for the 100K or for something else also?
Well, I don't know the answer to that for sure. I don't know if the pumps at the 300K are compatible, but I do see Leonard Whiteman is online. He could probably answer that better than I could. Leonard, if you don't mind speaking up.
Yeah, those pumps are it's for the 100K.
It's not the 300,
the 100. Right. The 100K pump.
Yep.
We had a pump shop, then we had a backup pump.
And then
pump.
There's card service 75, ENR. What is this?
ENR stands for Engineering News Record.
Is that what ENR is?
Yeah, we use that to determine our SDC rate increase every year.
Oh, okay, cool. And then also, we've got a blower for 6297.
Yeah, that was a confined space ventilation system. The one we had prior was very old and was failing. So we purchased a new confined space ventilation system.
So with the confined space, is all our testing equipment for the air quality good then?
Yes, it's all working well, and we calibrate it routinely.
Okay. Okay. And then LVDO Pro.
Hot chemical LBOD probe.
That's I believe that is a dissolved oxygen probe that we use for conducting our weekly BOD test, which is a wastewater compliance test.
Okay. And then card services, calibrations, quality control services.
Once a year, we have a professional technician come in and do professional servicing and calibration of most of our critical water and wastewater testing devices. For example, pH meters, dissolved oxygen meters, things of that nature. We have them professionally serviced once a year.
Okay. And then, again, there was a RIT safety training, and it doesn't say for what on the description.
Well, I believe... Leonard, was that for the makeup, for the confined space training, or was...
That was the confined space.
Okay.
That was the confined space. We had the water leak. We had the... eliminate the second half of the class, and when he came back and did the lockout tagout, we finished the rest of the confined space.
Okay, and then TMG services, parts for chlorine pumps. Are we going back to chlorine again for the wells?
We've always been on chlorine for the wells.
Okay, that's what I've got. Thank you.
All right. For accounts payable for May 15th and May 31st, 2023, I would entertain a motion.
I will move that we approve accounts payable for May 15th and May 31st of 2023.
My second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye. Cameron?
Aye.
Okay, we are unanimous. The item B under the financial report is fiscal year 22-23 general ledger. Are there any comments from the floor? Or excuse me, from the board? Okay, I would like to point out that I went through year-to-date expenses and revenues today and found about what you'd expect, in that there were some raises in chemicals and that sort of thing. But everything else, with the exception of payroll, was either well below year-to-date budgeting numbers or darn close. However, the extra expense in payroll, I'm assuming, is due to the amount of new certifications among our employees, which has raised our payroll beyond what we originally budgeted for. And personally, I think that's money well spent. And I'd like to congratulate personally all our employees and the job John has done in championing our employees to better themselves by getting their certifications. The other very positive thing that was kind of brought up last meeting under the general ledger is our interest earned on all our major funds, and that is year to date. We still got a couple more reporting periods. Is $109,993.02. That's interest earned on our assets. That's fantastic. That's all I have on that. Are there any other comments? All right, we'll move ahead to item six, the manager's report.
Thank you, Tom. A couple of things I definitely want to highlight from last month and to bring people up to speed on some even more current events. We are planning to conduct our flow test of the Horn Creek facility this week. This is for the purpose of demonstrating beneficial use of the water that Horn Creek pulls out of Horn Creek, or the facility pulls out of Horn Creek. And now that we are entering into summertime, we've got a lot of people in town, we will have, or should certainly have, no problem successfully completing that test. We have to run at full capacity for 4 hours out of an 8-hour period. That means we can run 4 hours straight, we can run an hour, stop an hour, run an hour, or any combination of the above. But we should be able to demonstrate that. Once we can demonstrate that, we can move forward with certifying the water that we are currently using at Horn Creek, which is a good thing. As the board knows, in a parallel effort, we are working to, we have applied for a permit extension for the amount of water allowed in the permit that we are not currently able to demonstrate that beneficial use for. So we're making progress on the water rights front. I think everything's going according to plan, and with any luck, by the within a few months, we'll not only have an extension on our permit, but we'll have another water rights certificate to capture the water that we demonstrate use for in that test I had mentioned. So that's happening this month. I did want to mention we had created a public meeting schedule. We had set aside June 28th for our master plans meeting, and I've had a personal conflict come up that I can't avoid, and I have to reschedule that meeting. But I will let the board know as soon as we have it rescheduled, and we won't kick it down the road too far. Wanted to mention as well, give the board an update on the Ruppel project. We received two bids for the Ruppel project. They're both from local contractors, and pleasantly surprised by how the bids came in. They're half what our engineers and I expected this project to cost. So very good news. We're reviewing the bid documents this week just to be sure that everything, all our bid requirements were complied with. And assuming they were, should be in a position to award this contract by Friday. So very good news on that. Things are looking very good with the Ruppel project. Wanted to mention that we're currently interviewing staff for the temporary, or interviewing applicants for the temporary position that we have opened up for seasonal summertime work. We have conducted one interview. Want to give our advertisement just a little bit more time to see if we can generate some more interest in the position. But we did conduct one interview, and that applicant interviewed very favorably. So we should be able to move forward with that fairly soon. Wanted to also mention that Dale Pesterfield, in a single day in May, passed two certification tests. That makes four certification tests that Dale has successfully passed in about the last 9 months. So we're very proud of Dale. He's done a tremendous job, and I know that we are all very pleased that this trend is continuing. And outside of that, Tom, that's all I have for the manager's report, if there's no questions.
I've got a question.
Cameron, go ahead.
John, do we have a job description for this temporary job, or did you just put it under the operator in training?
No, we created a job description specifically for this seasonal worker.
Okay. I would like a copy of that, please.
Okay.
Ann, you had a comment?
I did. I just want to pass along my congratulations to Dale, too, and I think I'm probably joined by everybody on the board doing that. And this is this month's report, and it seems to me that every month there's been at least one, if not two, of our staff who've completed additional certifications, and I just couldn't be more proud.
Yes, our staff is becoming more and more outstanding. They they continue with their studies and their on-the-job training, they are all exhibiting outstanding qualities that we look for in this authority.
And I think it reflects on John's leadership, too, supporting them doing those things. So I think
good job
on this front. Everything's moving along very, very well.
We've got a terrific team.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yes. One other thing, John, you mentioned commercial water sewer availability for a food truck or a food court.
That's on the agenda under new business. Do you want to wait until then?
Let's hold off on it. Excuse me.
Okay. Cameron, it sounded like you might have a question.
Yeah, I did. On our monthly report for our water and stuff, it's nice that it's coming down, that our unaccounted unbilled water is starting to come down. That detection equipment that we purchased and the training that we're using, it's kind of helping on that issue, which is really nice to see.
I agree, Cameron. I noticed it was like 16%. Is that a fairly normal number for unaccounted for water?
Yeah, rule of thumb, the industry standard is you don't want to see any more than 15% water loss. You're always going to see some, but you don't want to see any more than 15. But we are inching closer and closer to that, and I'd like to see it go substantially lower. And we're still looking for ways to make that happen.
Outstanding. Any other comments?
My neighbor across the way had a leak, and that our new metering system that it alarms and stuff has really helped. You know, our previous manager, that was a good step that we went in that direction to start taking care of some of these issues and stuff. So another useful tool in our handbag.
Okay, thank you, Cameron. Let's move on to item number 7, unfinished business, the Kiawanda Community Center AV proposal. John, do you have an update for us?
Well, I don't have too much. I know that at the last meeting we discussed this. We realized, I think, as a group, that the Chamber of Commerce is not a charitable organization, which caused us to put the brakes on this effort, or at least to table it till this month. I don't have a whole lot more to add, to be honest. I think that we've basically got three options, and we can donate money to the community center if we choose to without any earmarks. We can broker some kind of a deal that, you know, we want to contribute to the AV system at the community center, but since it's already paid for, how do we do that? Is there a way that if we were to contribute where that money could through the community center find its way back to the Chamber of Commerce to help offset some of their large expense for these AV upgrades. Or we can decide under the circumstances that this is something that we will decline to make any donation at all. And outside of that, I really don't have too much more to add, Tom. I guess what it would really be maybe up to the board to decide, obviously, and to see if there's any more discussion from the board about that. I have not been able to connect with the management at the community center to see if there's something we can work out, but part of me wonders if that should even be our role, to try to broker some kind of a pass-through of our donated dollars to the organization that contributed to all this equipment, because I think there are some board members who are desirous to contribute specifically to that, and we just have to decide how to do that or if it's even possible to do that at this point.
Well, at this point, since you weren't able to contact KCC staff, I would suggest we continue to table this until we get some more information. It was mentioned in the past that once we discovered the tax status of the chamber, that we couldn't donate to a 501c4 organization, then the only option would be the other way, to donate to KCC. Now, this is a joint venture, as I understand it, between KCC and the chamber. So KCC's also put up some money also. There was reference to some possible financial problems with the chamber. However, it was my understanding they're pretty flush with cash with the TLT tax and accountability might have been marginal. So at this point, I would say we need to look at it a little further. But if we do make a contribution, since the finances of KCC are considerably meager compared to the chamber, that a direct donation without an earmark would be probably better, because it's basically going to take up what their donation is. I don't know exactly what that is, but I think we need to table it and have some more discussion. Kathy, do you have any comments about that?
I think we don't know whether the community center even still needs money for this or not, and until we have more information, I don't think we can make an educated decision.
How about you, Sean?
I would just say, if we're going to table it, let's make sure that we do have that discussion with the community center.
And is it okay with the board to have those discussions? You know, because I'm happy to do that. I will try to. Jeanette's sometimes here, sometimes she's not. You know,
Here when we came tonight.
She was here when we came tonight. So it's possible I could even maybe talk to her a little bit afterward. But I do want a clear direction from the board on what that conversation should consist of.
Well, I think any kind of donation, personally, my opinion, should be, you know, directed without earmarks at this time, and also if there is a possibility of a rent adjustment, you know, revolving around that donation, if we decide to do it, so it'd be more of a negotiation.
Sure.
We would be. We don't want to earmark money for sports and AV systems?
Well, we don't want it to go back to the chamber. Right. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that, in my mind, the best thing to do since we got into the whole conversation about a donation of any sort was to help produce the audiovisual system. At this point, if we're going to make a contribution to the community center, I think it ought to definitely be directed to offset any a portion of their expense.
Okay.
For the AV center.
Okay,
I don't think it should be just a general use it however you want.
Okay, that makes
kind
sense.
Kind of donation.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
And I would also ask that their board seriously consider some reduction in rent over time if we're
so it might be something that would have to be brought to their board also.
Correct.
Okay,
that makes sense.
That does make sense.
I think you would go ahead and start those negotiations and keep us informed.
Yeah, I'm happy to start those conversations for sure.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and table it until John brings in information for us. Let's move on to item 7B, authority manager review form. And wait a minute, that's not where we're at.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. Okay, okay. The review form, we've all seen a copy of this, and last meeting, the meeting before last, we went through it item by item. And so today, we need as a board to approve that form so that we can use it for this year's annual review of John's performance. And correct me if I'm wrong, July 29th is your anniversary date?
It's actually the 19th.
Oh, not, I knew there was a 9 in there. Okay, the 19th, excuse me. So the 19th. I would entertain a motion at this time.
Tom, maybe before we vote, can I ask a question? And you're planning, you know, because things have to fall in place. I got to do stuff. I got to do mine before you guys do yours, and then give you guys time to consolidate it based off of, you know, the employee interviews and stuff like that. Are you planning to work up a bit of a schedule for the, over the course of the next couple of months?
I sent out an email for everybody's perusal. If you can get your credentials to us this week,
I can.
And I put down your anniversary date with July 19th or 29th, and I need to change that to the 19th.
And okay. I just want to clarify, by certifications, you're talking about my personal professional certifications.
Correct.
But I assume, you know, that means the core certifications in our field, you guys don't want to hear about, I got a flagger certification and I'm certified in confined space.
In reference to the job description,
okay.
The certs that were required for job description, where you are in relation to that.
I'll send out an email between now and Friday.
Okay, if you will complete your self-assessment on the new review form once we approve it, if you would have all that to me by Friday, August 4th, your self-assessment,
okay.
I will then email your comments to all the board by the end of day, Monday, August 7th, which is 3 days later, and I'll get a hard copy to Cameron that same day or next day. I will, after reviewing our HR consultant staff review, the authority manager job description, and our current, his current water, wastewater credentials, enter your comments and notes on the new electronic form, and return your document comments to me no later than the end of business on August 29th. Okay, I'll collate all the comic copies and distribute them back so y'all can see what we all said.
Yeah.
I mean, before you do, of course. And then no later than Tuesday, September 5th, and that's about a week prior to the executive session following our regular business meeting on September 12th.
Okay. So, yeah. Thank you, Tom. I thought it was worth just reviewing
sure.
that.
Well, I worked that out looking at prior years and following up on our prior chair's scheduling. So that works out pretty good. It's, I think, takes a couple of months, but we'll just get her done. Everybody seem comfortable with that? Okay, excellent.
So, and if anyone thinks it's odd that this all occurs after the anniversary date, it has happened before, and we make any salary advancements retroactive to the anniversary date. That's been our pattern in the past. So.
All right, that's okay with me. That sounds mm-hmm. fair to everyone else? Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, so I would entertain a motion to accept the review form as revised by all of us over a long period of time.
I move that the authority manager performance review form be approved as presented.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the authority manager review form. Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
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 Cameron?
Aye.
Is that an aye? Oh. Motion carried.
Yeah.
All right. Our water sewer availability request. Oh, wait. Employee handbook revision. John, that's on you. What's up?
Well, this employee handbook was drafted, revised and adopted about the time I came to work, and over the last couple of years we have seen the need in my mind for some modest revisions to the handbook. I've got apologize for the track changes and how small it made the print on this form, but I felt it was important to show what it was and what I had edited it to be. The first revision that I would propose we add is, since we're about ready to embark on hiring a temporary employee, I felt like we needed a description of that along with the other possible positions at the authority. That is in red on page 4. On the next page, on page 5, I would like to see us add an option for employees with any overtime accrued with a creation of a compensatory time. I call it a policy. This would be popular with the employees, and I have managed facilities with a similar policy for many years, and it has always worked very well, and it does give the employee additional flexibility in how to apply that overtime.
For clarity, that means that if a person accrues, let's say, 8 hours overtime at time and a half, that they would have, instead of being paid for that, they would have time off at 1.5 times 8, which would be 12 hours instead of 8. Is that correct?
That's exactly correct. The value of the time off is identical to the value of the overtime pay.
Okay.
So I would assume that the employees are supportive of that. Is that the case?
That's very much so the case. Okay. And I am proposing, though, that we cap it at 40 hours, just because employees generally don't work a lot overtime, but I want this to be, you know, kind of a benefit to the employee, give them some flexibility in how they apply it, but I'm not looking at this to be some huge bank of time. But, you know, I would rather see them use any compensatory time available before they use vacation, although that's probably not critical, but I think it is critical to cap it at some reasonable amount.
Does that end of employment, that's a sellback?
That would be a reimbursable, or that would be something that they could cash in at termination of employment. And I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned that, Cameron, because on page 9, where they talk about final pay to include unpaid wages and any accrued vacation, I also added and compensatory time. And that's on page 9. And that's appropriate because that's legitimately money owed.
Sure.
Right.
So,
money earned.
Yes.
Earned.
Yes. And I'm going through the pages here. I think that's the majority of the rest of the changes to the employee handbook I'm proposing are toward the back of the handbook. And I'm almost there. So on page 25, I felt it was necessary to add a couple of things. I don't see anything in the employee handbook that talks about personal protective equipment, PPE. Obviously, we issue this stuff to the staff. I think because it's from a safety standpoint, I think it's worthy of mentioning in an employee handbook. But it also gives us the opportunity to point out that this PPE will remain the property of the authority if employment is terminated for any reason.
I had a question about that. The $200 a year stipend for work shoes or work boots.
Yeah, that's the boot allowance one.
Those boots still be the property of the authority, or?
Likely not, because nobody wants to use an old pair of boots.
Well, I understand that, but you might
make a mention
there.
Yeah, and this boot allowance, I mean, we provide uniforms, and when I say uniforms, they're not necessarily what you think. They're shirts, they're a jacket, they're a safety vest, there's some work pants. A lot of what we do is very hard on clothes. And these clothes, though, remain at all times the property of the authority. We don't let employees take these home. We don't allow them to be laundered anywhere at work. And when somebody needs some new pants or some new shirts, we generally provide those. And, you know, but sometimes there are some people doing some jobs where, you know, clothes get wore out a little faster than others. But we do provide those. As I say, they're called uniforms in the employee handbook. I'm not sure that's a great way to describe them. But what isn't included in that is boots, safety shoes, footwear. And in our case, it's a bit of a challenge because all of our technicians really require two different types of boots. They require rubber boots for when they're working in the muck, in a water leak, and up to their knees in mud and water. But then they also need a good quality leather boot for
hard
all
toes,
the other situations.
Hard toes?
Yes, they're all required to meet the ASTM standard for safety shoes. They will all be not necessarily, well, they could be steel toe, steel shank, although I prefer the composite toe and the composite shank because the metal is sometimes I get a little concerned from electricity standpoint, number one. And number two, people are walking around with steel toe boots. It could make it harder to locate things underground with our metal detector. So that's why my recommendation is that they're a composite, which has all the safety ratings of steel. But because we don't, that's not technically part of the uniform, but it's an important part of the safety. I believe that that we need to have a some kind of a reasonable yearly boot allowance for each employee.
All right. Anything else on the handbook?
Yes. There's a couple more things. Hepatitis B vaccinations. I believe we're required by law to offer those to our employees who are just because of the potential exposure to raw sewage and everything. There wasn't anything prior in our handbook about this. I wanted to add something about this. This is a hepatitis B vaccine. I believe it's a series of three shots, and I wanted to put in there, we need to make sure that we offer that to all employees and that it's at our expense. And if an employee declines, for example, I declined because I already had the series of shots, they just have to sign something that's a disclosure that they have been offered the shots and declined.
So if they want to get that shot, they go on work time to the clinic and get it done.
Absolutely. And I think you can actually go to pharmacies and even get those shots, I believe.
That's where I got mine when I traveled overseas.
Yeah, but it would be on company time that we give them the opportunity to get that. And this is something especially important to remember to offer to new employees. So wanted to put something about that in the book. There's just a couple of more. I made some...
On the shots?
Yeah.
Should there also be a bubble up on the tire to make sure that it took? Because I had to do it twice because the first time it didn't take.
So how would... Tell me again your suggestion for addressing that.
They have a blood test after all you've taken all the shots. I think it's like maybe 4 weeks after, and they take it's a titer or something like that to see if it actually took. Why go through the pain of all those shots and it doesn't work?
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that, Cameron, but I'll check into that. And while we're talking, it strikes me that I probably should have said something about COVID vaccinations in here as well, because we should offer those to our staff as well. We have in the past. Maybe I don't know. I don't know how the board feels about that, but.
COVID is the disease du jour for the last couple of years, but you know there'll be something else. Might mention that any other health vaccinations that are recommended by the Oregon Health Authority that we would entertain to provide that for this work environment, or how would we say that? Ann, you have a comment?
I do. I feel like the hepatitis B vaccination is specifically related to job expectations. Any other kind of vaccination, I personally see as the individual choice.
Okay.
And I don't think that the authority as an employer, while we could support people who want to go get COVID vaccines or measles, mumps, and rubella, I don't think it's the employer's responsibility or place to require those.
Well, let's say the emergency type, but COVID was considered an emergency.
At the time, we made a decision as a board not to require that for our staff. So, and we did it because it is a personal choice.
Yeah, and I wouldn't.
I think the way this is written is just right, okay. And we ought to not complicate it further.
So what about tetanus?
Well, I think if somebody has, say for example, somebody stepped on a rusty nail or something, especially if it's during work. I think it's something we can should consider. I will say we have to be conscious of the fact that if that occurs, I believe that escalates that injury into a reportable, because they received an immunization, they received treatment for the injury, which is probably not, should not be our major concern, but it just, you know, that that turns an injury like that into a reportable injury.
Which is workman's comp, right?
I think anybody can, I mean, personally, I think everybody should have a tetanus shot too, but you could step on a rusty nail at work or at home or at Washington Square, and that's not specifically work-related, again, to me, whereas working with wastewater is specifically related to hepatitis B.
But if you step on it at work, if something happens, you cut your hand, it is work-related then.
Yeah, but that falls under worker's comp and not
if you go to the ER, if you go to the ER, they're going to give you a tetanus shot. If they think that you stepped on a nail and you've got a puncture wound, that's going to be part of their protocol.
Yeah, they're going to require that you show an up-to-date tetanus
vaccine,
or they're going to give you one.
Except for me, because I'm allergic to tetanus.
They're not providing care.
I'm allergic to it, too. I don't want any part of it.
Okay.
Well, very good feedback, everyone. I appreciate that. Just a couple more items here. Page 27, just a little housekeeping adjustments to the injury reporting. Nothing substantial added. Although the last item, which is on page 28, and covers emergency closings, this is something I wanted to address because it did happen a couple of times this last winter. There are situations where extreme weather could force us to close the office or to disrupt normal business hours. And I called the shot that did once for an ice storm last winter that we opened late. And I think we got off a little early the day before the storm, because the storm was rolling in that evening. And then you all might recall that very strange snowstorm we got, where I had like 10 inches at my house in Tillamook. You know, but the thing I didn't like about the original policy is it says if our business is closed, for some emergency circumstance, almost always weather-related, that is unpaid for our staff. And I never liked that because, you know, our staff plan to come to work. They plan the budget around their paychecks. It's not their fault that we had severe weather. And I believe that the authority really needs to accept the responsibility for that as just kind of a cost of doing business.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I wanna give the employees the option to apply comp time, to apply their floating holiday, to apply their vacation to that. And I think that's fair. But there is one thing I wanted to take it a step further. Because when we're at work, we're all about safety, right? You know, it's all safety this, safety that. We're, you know, going to the extreme in many cases to make sure we're safe at work. But the rule currently says, well, if the office is open, we expect you to come in pretty much no matter what. And there are cases because we're a small town. A lot of people live outside of town. I live 40 minutes away. We have employees that live out Highway 22. If the employee believes that attempting to come to work presents an unreasonable or unavoidable potential risk to their safety, I think that that's a call that we have to allow the employee to make and to honor that, because what if they're right and we're wrong? You know, and it seems, in my mind, to stress all these safety requirements and to emphasize safety so heavily at work, but then to not apply that toward potential dangers for employees to get to and from work seems a little strange to me. So in those conditions where an employee just believes that he can't get in safely, even though the office is officially open, even though the office is officially open, I'd like to give them an option to choose to stay home and without any penalty at work or anything like that, and in fact be able to use the same time off they have, whether it's vacation or comp time, to cover those days as well, because it has come up, and it came up for several employees just last winter. And, you know, of course, any employee can just call in sick, and we're just going to, you know, we're going to say, okay. But, I mean, this kind of legitimizes that philosophy. Now, this is a little bit maybe more controversial, this idea, but it's something that that we have encountered, and I feel like it's something we have to address.
I don't have any problem with that.
Okay.
Cameron, do you agree?
I'd like to see something in there, though, if, you know, the weather clears and stuff, that it is that you are, you know, expected to come to work, you know, instead of, the roads are icy. You know, the roads do clear eventually, but I know there was this year we had a freaky snowstorm and people didn't make it to work. I get that. But you should also be aware of that, you know, you should come to work when it is safe.
Yes. Well, and I don't think anybody would abuse that, but it gives them the ability to, you know, make a judgment call. But certainly a week later and the snow's been off the ground forever, you know, they can't still claim that.
If they take time off, they are allowed to use comp time or sick leave or whatever they want.
Any of the above. Okay. And I know I'm running just a tad bit over on this topic, but I do want to address one last thing because I think it's important.
On the handbook?
Well, related to policy, this has to do with a policy issue. I did not see it in the handbook, but I do believe it was in a previous handbook, and it's in our job descriptions. And I just wanted to say that we've had this long-standing policy about employee facial hair. And it's not just that the organization doesn't like beards. It's related to the potential need to wear a respirator and to have a good seal of that respirator. Now, as I said, this has been a long-standing policy, but I believe this policy has outlived its usefulness. Before the new wastewater treatment plant was built, our only option to treat our biosolids was to lime stabilize it, and our only option was to pour it from 35-pound bags, which created a lot of dust and all that stuff. Well, now we dewater our sludge with our screw press. We seldom lime stabilize. In fact, I can't think of a reason why we would ever have to lime stabilize our sludge going forward. It's less desirable because lime stabilized sludge takes 8 loads to the Beaver property, where the dewatered sludge only takes 3. And so the reality of it is we don't have the hazard to require respirators anymore. Because of our hydrated lime. And I want to let everybody know, I mean, I'm big into safety, and I am intimately familiar with this chemical. I have been around this chemical for the greater part of my career, and I would not compromise employee safety. But even the SDS, the safety data sheet, says respirators are not necessary with this chemical unless you're in an unventilated area, which doesn't describe our situation, and we're likely not going to lime stabilize our sludge anymore. So
I have a question.
Yeah.
I see your point here, and I agree with it. What about when we have to deal with asbestos pipe repair? do we have, those actually, you have to have a total hazmat suit.
Well, that's a whole different set of requirements, and...
So facial hair, would that come into effect there?
That's a good point. I'd have to look that up. But what I would say is that the respirator policy always addressed the hydrated Lyme. It didn't mention, it didn't really focus on the asbestos. You bring up a good point. If we are cutting the asbestos, there's a lot of PPE we have to wear, which would be like an AC pipe. But I will say that if that does occur, we should be able to have plenty of staff able to respond to it. My thought about this facial hair requirement is it's a very intrusive requirement. I mean, intrusive into people's personal lives and how they want to address or to display facial hair if they so decide. And I feel like we better have very good justification for a policy like that. Because, I mean, let me ask you the question. Is even if somebody has to wear a respirator while they're cutting the asbestos pipe, I don't think we've done that in 5 to 6 years. And I have to ask the board, is it worth having a blanket policy for every employee that they cannot have any facial hair whatsoever because of the risks of that? And I think that we will have other options. Just because we don't have any rules against facial hair doesn't mean that everybody wants to grow a beard. We're still going to have at least 2/3 of our employee who are clean-shaven, me included.
So in those situations, is the PPE available now adequate to completely cover an employee's head and an entire body to protect with a respirator?
Well, if we're talking about asbestos,
yeah,
they'll have a full suit on. I mean, the PPE requirements are pretty intense
for
asbestos.
So it has nothing to do with facial hair and sealing.
Well, if somebody has a beard, they aren't a good person to do that work because they aren't going to, they could potentially not have an airtight seal.
So you have to make sure that the people who are doing that job aren't compromised that way.
That's correct. Okay. And I think with 9 field technicians, I think we can handle anything that gets thrown at us without having to have such an invasive policy.
Sean, do you have any comments?
I would just say, I mean, I'll defer to you. I know that fire departments have facial hair requirements for that very reason, so they can get a good seal around their face. So I would just say, as long as you're okay with it, and I was going to ask the same question as Tom in regards to asbestos. So
yeah, well, I tell you what, I will dig deeper into that. What I will say is, where I come from, we have always had facial hair, no facial hair requirements, but we're dealing with chlorine gas, we're dealing with ozone, we're dealing with stuff that can almost kill you instantly. So, I mean, if we were disinfecting with chlorine gas, we would not be having this discussion right now. It's just the hydrated Lyme, if that's the driver, and that's what seems to have been the driver for all these years, it's not a driver anymore.
Okay.
Well, keep about us informed. That we do deal with chlorine.
Well, it's liquid chlorine, though, Cameron. It's not gas chlorine.
Well, and then how many confined spaces do we have that we have to go into?
Well, we have a lot. We have a lot, but there's no requirement for respiratory protection in confined spaces. You have to check the atmosphere and before you enter, and in many cases, you need to ventilate the space. But we do not send people into confined spaces with hazardous atmospheres. If we had to, a full face respirator would not be sufficient. It would be an SCBA. And we don't have SCBAs. We don't have anybody trained in SCBAs. So we're not a first responder in that case. We would call the fire department.
Well, I think we should have, they have the, where you trim below, there's a trim line. Being in the fire department for 25 years, and there were people that did have beard, facial hair, but it had to be, the mandible above and below. I believe that, you know, that was put into place for safety. I'm a strong believer in safety, and anybody, you know, that has asthma, COPD, smokes, or anything like that, it, you know what it feels like to not be able to breathe. You know, I think going one step further for our employees, safety, safety, just like the steel-toed boots, earplugs, face shields, anything else we can provide. You know, if you want to, yeah.
Well, and I
policy.
And of course, in the fire department, we would expect a blanket requirement like that, because you've got hazmat teams. You never know what you're dealing with. You're going in and fighting fires with smoke. You're wearing SCBAs all the time, which we're not. But no, I appreciate the comment, Cameron. If I was concerned about this, this wouldn't be anything that I would be advocating.
Well, as a board member, I just don't want the board to be liable for something that we could have prevented.
Understood. Outside of, I think that's it, though, Tom, for that whole. Now, I guess a question for the board is, does the board have to approve, I assume, changes to the employee handbook?
Well, these are policies.
Yes.
So I would say yes.
Okay.
So
I've got a question on injury reporting and some other stuff. I'd like to go through this document.
Well, it was presented to you.
It's part of the packet.
It's part of the packet, but I didn't have time to go through everything, and there were some additions that I would like to have added that weren't in John's report, like the injury reporting. Didn't we have it that a failure to not report an injury?
Well, that was there.
I think it was.
A failure to report an incident.
That was part of the changes.
What's that?
That was part of the changes. I can't remember the exact the exact wordage,
okay.
But that was
I've
in your packet.
Here. I've got it here if you want me to read it.
Go ahead, read it.
Injury reporting, and this is language that would be substituted for the existing first sentence. Injuries on the job, no matter how slight, should be reported to the authority manager immediately. And then the next two sentences, failure to report accidents and or injuries can result, and or injuries is new language added, can result in violation of conditions of insurance coverage and state laws, leading to difficulties in processing insurance and, new words again, workers' compensation claims, period. Injured workers must fill out a, new language, an incident report and submit it as soon as possible to the authority manager. And the last sentence is the authority manager is stricken. The authority manager will assist in filling out a workers' compensation report.
So would it be useful instead of...
Hold on, Cameron, just a second. Cameron, just a second. Go ahead, Kathy.
So would it be useful instead of saying submit it as soon as possible to put a time limit on it within 24 hours or 3 days or whatever you think is appropriate? Because as soon as possible is rather vague.
Should be reported to the authority manager immediately, it says.
Let's see.
Let's fill out an incident report and submit it as soon as possible.
So reporting it is different than the incident report. Is that correct?
Oh, reporting it, yeah. I mean, the incident report should be...
An accident report.
Yeah, it's basically an accident report. One of the things I wanted to emphasize is that notify me immediately, and I use that words for any injury, no matter how slight, because I, sure enough, employees don't want to come and tell you about their smashed finger. And then 3 days later, it's all swelled up and infected. So one of the points I really wanted to make that wasn't in there is the employee doesn't get to decide what's reportable or not. They report everything and let me decide.
Yes, immediately.
Immediately. And then the incident report, I said, is submit as soon as possible. The incident report is important. I think it's a bit of a formality, but in terms of needing to fill it out and have a record of it and, you know, have the details about what happened and why. And we can certainly change that to immediately. I'm wondering if there might be an instance where somebody can report the injury immediately but can't stop and fill out the report immediately.
Maybe they're in the hospital.
We hope not.
I know, but it's hard to put a specific time period on that piece because you're
things are
projecting
kind of fluid
to any possible thing that could ever happen. So maybe if it would be reasonable to add a parenthetical phrase, something to the effect of within a week at the latest.
Well, I could probably even do better than that. I could say as soon as possible, but no longer than 48 hours.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That
would be nice.
And so what happens if you're not there? Who do they report to?
One sec, Cameron. We'll get back to you. If I'm not there, they know how to reach me by phone. And I'd rather they did that than if you're
on vacation in South Africa?
Well, I'm not planning any of that. But here's what I'll say is if I'm just not available, and I could change this to me or your supervisor if the authority manager is not available.
There you go.
I could change it to that.
That's reasonable.
Yes, that, yeah.
Cameron, yeah. Sorry, we didn't mean to step on you there. What did you want to say?
I want to talk to who's our workman's comp, because they could also deny the workman's comp if it wasn't filled out in a timely manner. And you can also, it should be a time limit. And there also should, when it says report accidents can result from violation conditions of insurance coverage, but it also could be your job, because it's terms of employment.
So what are you suggesting?
You might want to check with workman's comp and see how they prefer it, because that will be either the worker gets workers' comp or gets denied because you didn't turn it in a timely fashion.
Well, 48 hours seems like a reasonable time, but I agree with you.
Yeah, thank you, Cameron.
Follow up on that.
I can. If the board wants to follow up on anything and table this till the next meeting, or if the board's comfortable with these revisions, whatever you guys think.
I have one more question about these forms, because in my reading of this, an incident report is a PCJWSA form. That's an internal document where the employee's reporting to our system. Workman's compensation report is a completely different animal, and not in all cases are both, we may have incident reports that don't go to a workman's comp, and I think we need to be sure and keep those two forms separate in our minds as we think about this.
They have the same report when you go to, if you go to the ER for a workman's comp or a job-related incident, it's going to be out in there. They're going to ask how the incident happened.
Of course so they are, but we have an internal form for our own purposes. So,
well, at this point, on the revisions that John has suggested, I think we're pretty much in agreement with all except this last one, where we need to probably check with workman's comp and what their understanding of a reasonable time is, and bring that back to us next meeting.
I'm happy to do that. Sure.
The only other thing I wanted to say about this handbook revisions, talking about benefits and such for our employees, I'd like to bounce this off the board. I experienced this working for the state, and because we are a public entity, it's very common in business to Christmas time to give a Christmas bonus or even gifts to our employees. But in a public entity organization like this, we can't do that. However, what has become commonplace in the state of Oregon for state employees is a special holiday day that they call the Governor's Leave Day. And what it is kind of a day off for employees during the holidays only. So like a week before Thanksgiving to a week after New Year's, as an extra day off, as a thank you, and a kind of a year-end bonus. It'd be in this case, I think it'd be appropriate to call it Board of Directors Day.
So, but I just Tom, wanted to, if you envision something like that, how would that differ from our floating holiday day off? That
I don't know how the floating holiday is described.
Well,
this would be a day, either use it or lose it, and it'd be an extra day off as a thank you bonus for a good work, and especially the way things have been going the last couple of years, I think it's certainly deserved among our team.
Well, I appreciate that, and of course, staff would not hate that at all. You know, if that was something the board would consider seriously, another option might be to just give somebody not only Thanksgiving off, but the day after Thanksgiving off, which we don't currently do, and it would still be a holiday thing. Most of the employers I've worked for, usually Thanksgiving is usually a two-day holiday to allow for travel and so forth. That might be another option. Although, if I'm not mistaken, I think we've also got Columbus Day off, and this is the first place I've ever worked that had Columbus Day off. So, I would certainly not try to talk the board out of any line of discussion.
Well, this
like
was just an off the wall thing here,
sure.
And since we're talking about a benefits and employee handbook, I wanted to bounce it off the board to give it some thought. Your ideas about like Thanksgiving is okay too, but possibly discuss it with staff and see how they think.
Well, I can tell you right now, everybody saves their personal holiday to take on the day after Thanksgiving because we close the office the day after Thanksgiving anyway. So if something like that, then they could have their floating holiday back and have more flexibility to use it for something of their choice for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, that sounds like a good
that
idea.
That sounds reasonable.
Yes.
Yeah, well, discuss it with staff, see what they think, and bring a proposal back to us next month.
I will do that. Cameron, what's that?
I disagree. We're a public utility, and I don't imagine the tax rate payers or the rate payers would really like to hear that. I think that's a bad idea, just my opinion.
Okay. Thank you, Cameron.
I have one comment.
Go ahead. Shout, John.
I don't want this to hold up. Moving forward on this discussion, but I would like to see moving forward a revisit of the sexual and other unlawful harassment sections. I think that section needs some improvement.
Okay.
So, and I can certainly make some recommendations to you off meeting.
Do you want to, maybe you and I could talk, because we'll table this till next meeting, and then maybe we can make some good adjustments there too.
Sure.
And incorporate them into something new that we would adopt as all, you know, collectively with the other revisions.
Sure.
Okay, appreciate that.
Okay, that's good. We'll table this whole discussion until next month then.
So, I just want to thank John Milford, the work he's done on this. Employee handbooks are a huge amount of work, and you always have to be keeping them up to date. Once they're done, they're never done. So thank you for doing your work on this.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
All right. Under new business, water sewer availability request with the new food court that is being proposed.
Say some words about this. We've got a water and sewer availability request for this food court project. I apologize for the late addition to the board packet. I didn't get it from the applicant until late. And the problem is when we only meet once a month, if you miss this window, you're 4 weeks out till you can reconsider it. So I sorry for the late addition with the written request from this person, but it was short, and I felt like it was important to get that in for board consideration. Now, I will say, and Ann actually discovered this, that these people don't own the property yet. They're in the process of buying it. So with that in mind, it may be, I think we can probably all get together and eventually approve water and sewer availability for this venture. They've got a lot of other hoops to jump through, though. I mean, they're building in a floodway, they got the airport to deal with, and so just because we may tell them water and sewer is available doesn't mean that they're going to successfully navigate all these permit requirements. But since Ann, to her credit, discovered that the current owner of this tax lot is not the same people who are asking us for water and sewer availability, I think it probably makes sense to wait until that happens to consider their request. But
I have a comment here. As I was thinking about this the other day, we're talking about up to 4 food carts and a restroom, and is that going to require 4 hookups?
Well, see, and this is something that we do have to discuss, because I never was able to follow up on what you had indicated earlier, that at some point in the past, Ann recalled that somebody had the food court idea before.
Yes.
And I don't think anybody can really remember why that didn't happen or why.
They just lost interest in
they
doing it.
They just lost interest.
They just quit talking about it.
Well, that brings up the sewer. I can see a sewer hookup for the restroom, but gray water out of the food carts, that needs to have, egress also. So are we talking about 4 hookups, possibly something like an apartment to charge according to that way instead of like 4,
Well, see, this is something we have to decide, the board has to decide, because I don't think we've ever gone far enough down this road to establish an SDC structure for this type of business.
I don't know how far down the road the discussions got, because they never came to the board about the old one, but I know that they were pretty extensive. So that was not something that the board was involved in. It was work that was being researched and thought about in preparation in case there was an application. But I have no idea how far it went and
well, and
I know it was seriously discussed, and all of these other issues. I mean, we are required to provide water and sewer to anybody within our boundary. So it's not a question of whether we will provide it or not. It's a question of what do they need exactly, and then we go through a process of an official statement of availability that becomes part of their county application process. And then when they apply for the new service, that's when we go into engineering mode and make sure the pipes are big enough and the sewer stuff outflow is handled right. And
I think the water and sewer availability is a statement that
we have rules.
Well, it's a statement that our system has the capacity to accept your development
right.
the way it's been described.
Right.
But the bigger question and the more complicated question for us is, what are we going to require? What are we going to establish as an SDC rate for something that is rather unprecedented in Pacific City and hasn't been discussed or decided upon before? I will say that, for example, a four-cart food court, I think it's extreme to require four different services and make them pay four SDCs, and then, oh, by the way, charge them four bills, monthly bills at the commercial rate. So, but we have to decide what we think that, what our SDC structure should be for an application like this.
It'd be nice to find out if what kind of usage, if we have any other precedents. There's a similar court now called the Pines in Lincoln City near Taft.
And there's one in Tillamook in the city. And I think there are options for researching what other agencies do. And since this is premature because the people making the application don't own the property at this time, I don't think that we, at least I personally don't feel obligated to answer this request at this moment. When they are the owner of the property, we will have a specific request from the people that are going to be doing it. That gives us some time to do some research on these other issues that are coming up.
And I think it's a great idea. If they've got something somewhere in Lincoln City, I'll call the city of Lincoln City and say, how do you guys handle it?
The place is called Tillamook, because
Tillamook has a big food cart center, too.
All right, let's see if we can find some data for us. John?
A couple of comments to throw out as part of this discussion as well. One is we know that there's not water and sewer to the property already. Is that correct?
That is correct. We actually are going to be, as part of the Rupel project, going to be stubbing out a water service to the lot. So we'll be closer, it'll be an easier time to be able to get that connected. But currently we don't have anything on this corner lot.
Okay.
Is that with Joe?
Hold on, Cameron.
Just a second.
So, at one time, I attempted to put in a food cart, and there were, when I had discussions with PCJWSC, there were issues related to having a water and sewer hookup to the unit itself. In other words, PCJWSA treated it as if it were like an RV at someone's house, where water and sewer couldn't be permanently attached to it. So I would recommend looking through our policies on that to see if our current policies may provide some insight as to what those requirements are.
Okay.
I would also assume that we would want some sort of a backflow prevention with this site.
And there would be a central... there would be a central grease trap or grease interceptor that would be common to all the vehicles before the gray water enters our collection.
The grease interceptor would all collect into one grease interceptor?
That's my understanding, having talked to these folks, is the idea is they'll provide some kind of a centrally located grease interceptor that the discharge from the sinks and all four vehicles would go through, and then as a group the water would enter our collection system downstream of that.
So that's like a grease trap that a restaurant has?
Correct.
Same thing. So there are already rules in place for who maintains that, how often it has to be checked, and
absolutely.
All that business. That's
and,
not hard stuff.
Sean's aware of those.
Yep.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, Cameron, you had a comment?
Yeah, is that lot, that's that corner lot right next to the meat shop, right?
Correct.
Now, that lot is so, I mean, what is it, 35 or 40 by 40 or 50 by 50? And is
not
it
very
a commercial
big.
Lot?
My understanding, it's commercially zoned.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's, it's going to be a tight squeeze.
Yeah, and the county will take all those considerations into place before they give permits.
There's lots of hoops.
Yeah.
Food carts. I think that we should have a minimum of how many for lot size if we do, I mean down the road, if we do. So many per square or whatever on it.
Well, I think that's more a county decision than a PCJ decision.
Well, I mean, what we did with the hotel, or the Slough Bridge apartments, those were considered single hookups, and the rest of them were all single. Did we do a rate plan for just four, or were they were single, right? But as a unit, this is going to be really hard. I'm just wondering, I just don't want to see that we've got...
Not our problem.
Like that small lot size.
That's their problem.
Four carts on it, and they're squeezed in there, and there's no place for parking, and you're adding issues of, you know, water, sewer, and the homeless, and everybody using the restroom and stuff.
Well, that's really the county's problem at this point. So. All right, well, let's move on. Item 9, guest questions and comments. John, did we have any comments or letters come in from the public?
We did not.
Do you have a comment?
About what?
Anything.
Well, I heard that they couldn't have any structure on that piece of land because of the flooding of the river.
Well, I can. My understanding, and I've gone through this, and I know Sean's been through this. Is that if they're planning to build a stationary restroom, that's probably their biggest challenge. I don't know if, because these are technically on wheels, if they're given any latitude with that no-rise type of analysis. And so it may be a little bit different based on the fact that they're kind of considered mobile, even though they're there permanently, but they're considered mobile. I don't know.
Yeah. And that's all up to the county planning department. That has nothing to do with us.
A motorhome has, or a trailer.
That'll be up to the county to decide.
Yeah.
It's not up to us
really
to decide.
It's really not your worry now, because they're
going to
say no.
Yeah. Well, and like I say, they've still got a lot of permitting hoops to jump through. Yeah. All right. Item 10, director comments.
Yep, I do. I want it to be noted that the viral, the people that are online, that be noted in the board meeting minutes and stuff, that it's done before the meeting, or call people. That,
missed that, Cameron.
He wants to know who's tuned in online. And
then that we do it after our roll call.
Okay. Looks like Robert Pippinger, Tim Hurst, Leonard, and Jeb Pippinger is online, as well as Rochelle. And we have Barbara Giddings as a guest.
So I'd like to have this announced before we get rolling on our meeting. Once again,
at the first part of the meeting.
At the first part of the meetings, well, that'd be fine. Otherwise, people come in the middle, and we'll just have to make a note at that time.
I would like to say if we ever get the attendance that we hope to get at these places, that may or may not be feasible or not, but certainly with, you know, a half a dozen people, I think it's easy enough.
All right. Any other comments from the directors?
Sean. Cameron Dunn, I've got
it. Sean, go ahead.
Yep. I just would like to reiterate Ann's comment earlier and congratulate Dale on his new credentials.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you. Congratulations. All right. If there are no other comments, it is now 6:41. I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
We don't
adjourn.
Really.
We don't? Okay, well,
adjourn.
Where is adjourn?
Adjourn. That's the next thing on the agenda.
Yeah. All right.
Good
Thanks
deal.
Y'all.
Thank you all.
I'm shut off that recorder.